Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it is here again. It's the Gridiron Chefs. I am your host, James Greenwood. And with me always is my main man, Mr. TP Timeless. What's going on, TP?
Nothing much, James. We definitely about to take off. I'm sitting in the kitchen right in front of this griddle and ready to pop off some of this gridiron talk, man. And we definitely got something in store for the people that are in tune to the kitchen if they want to call in. Calling number is 917-889-9592, and let's get busy.
We've got our special guest this morning with who's the host of the NFL Expert Show. Brian, are you on the line?
Yes, sir. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for having me on the show.
All right. Thanks a lot for coming on. All right. Today we are doing AFC North talk. AFC North is always a fun division to look at. There's always huge competition year in and year out, with the Browns always tending to be near the bottom. But maybe that might change this year, and we're going to be talking about them all show long. So speaking of the Browns, let's start with them right now. The Browns have been pitiful for years and years and years. Even back when the Ravens were the Browns, they were still a very poor team. And last year was no different. They ended up being the 7th pick overall. They were 29th in scoring, 32nd in passing and total yards, which is dead last, ladies and gentlemen. And they were also next to dead last in total defense. So I'm going to start off by talking about what they were able to do this offseason. Especially in the draft, because the draft is where teams are built. And in the first round, with the 7th pick overall, they picked up Joe Hayden, the cornerback out of Florida. He's an exciting corner with long arms, and you expect him to we expect him to fall in the draft due to his bad combine and pro day 40 times. So the fact that they picked him up at the 7th pick overall just tells you how much Holmgren and company take tape into account over these combine numbers, because he's always looked good, and I think he plays faster than he times, which is a rarity for NFL players, especially in this day and age where you're basically trained from the end of the season to the NFL combine to run that 40 time. And I'm going to kick this over to Brian. What do you think about Joe Hayden, and was this the right pick at this point?
I like Joe Hayden as a player. I think he's a very good player, like you alluded to. He's definitely one of those players that acceleration-wise and short area burst. Plays much, you know, quicker than he was timed. The only real problem that I have is when you play in the NFL against some of these elite wide receivers, I question the pick to a certain extent. To pick in the top 10 and pick a corner who runs a 4.6 40 or a 4.58 40, I don't know. I like Joe Hayden a lot, but I actually had Kyle Wilson from Boise ahead of him on the speed merit alone, because I think that they both have loose hips. I think that they both drive off the ball. I think they're both playmakers. I'm wondering how Joe Hayden is going to be able to play in a non-Tampa 2, non-cover 2 type defense. The pick scares me a little bit, but the fact that Mike Holmgren made it, he always makes picks with, you know, his scheme in mind. So I'm pretty sure that he's going to set this kid up for success, and he's going to give this kid an opportunity to be successful right away.
Well, he did play in what is known as the speed division, the SEC, and he picked up quite a few picks. He picked up 8 picks in that time, and he's played against some of these faster SEC wide receivers. TP, I want to kick this over to you and get your thoughts on the Joe Hayden pick.
Well, the good thing about Hayden is he does have that winning tradition, but one player doesn't, you know, hold the chemistry of a team, especially a team with a losing regime, being the Cleveland Browns. So he's going to have to do more than just, you know, hold his end of the side of the field, especially with Cribs over there, too. I think, you know, Cribs actually draws inside of him in the kicking game. I mean, he can put points up on the board, but those two players alone are going to be impact players. But let's be real. They just lost Brady Quinn. I mean, a lot of people don't think, you know, too highly of what Brady Quinn brings to the game, but Brady Quinn was a good, credible quarterback for the time being. He knew the offense, but the offense, you know, the chemistry had to come together with him. And the running back Harrison started picking up late into the season, which that's actually a plus. But when they got rid of Quinn, they brought in Dell Holm. Dell Holm actually led the league last year in interceptions, and he had a few games where he threw 5 interceptions. He's a gunslinger, but he's not accurate at all, especially with the receivers that he had being Steve Smith and Musin Muhammad. I mean, the Browns are going to struggle, but I want to see how it all pans out. I hope they have a better season than what they once did, because Cleveland definitely needs it. We're all looking at LeBron, you know, in the basketball side of things, and the Browns are, you know, probably the most talked about team in that city, because football, as its draw alone, you know, it causes a heavy impact. And the Browns, I say they're about a year or two away from being where they need to be, but they need a lot more help, you know, other than just the cornerback position. They're looking at a position where it's probably not even a heavy need. I think they more or less needed to concentrate on the quarterback position. They let a lot of quarterbacks slip through their fingers, but, hey, I mean, Holmgren knew what he was doing. Holmgren is, you know, back at the helm, and we'll see what he has up his sleeve.
That's an interesting thing coming up through the chat room, is that a lot of reports are coming out that Joe Hayden's been has been struggling in training camps, which is big, because right now we were all expecting him to be a first day starter, putting him next to Sheldon Brown, who they picked up from the Philadelphia Eagles along with Chris Gokong, and that was supposed to be a real boost to that defense. But I'm gonna move on to the first second round pick, which was T.J. Ward, and this was a bit of a reach, if you ask me. I mean, I don't see him as much of anything more than a special teams player. He's fast, but in coverage, he's always been shaky. Although in run support, he's been very good, but it's like having Roy Williams. I mean, the old Roy Williams without the pass coverage on this team, and I just don't see him as a high second round pick. And I'm going to kick this over. I'm going to go backwards and over to you, TP. TJ Ward was a free safety of Oregon. What are your thoughts on this kid?
Well, TJ Ward, I mean, he is a good, credible player coming out of Oregon. You know, I did watch a couple of Oregon games. And the one thing about Oregon, especially in the Pac-10, the defense, you know, it wasn't all there. Especially in the Pac-10 alone. Like, it was a very high-scoring game, and he's going to have to make a big adjustment, because he could be held accountable for a lot of, you know, big plays, and they could attack him if he's, you know, deceptive, shall I say. You know, like, he has to be there, but, you know, the NFL is going to work with him. Like somebody just said, like, rookies are going to have issues, and you're going to have to work with them, which is true. He's going to have to pick up the system and be able to hold his end of the ball up, you know, but we'll see how it all falls into play. I'm really thinking that he should be able to be, you know, somewhat okay, especially in that division where it's very pass-happy. The NFC North, they do not play around. There's a whole bunch of quarterbacks that are gunslingers in themselves. So he better be on his toes, because right now, I mean, even though Ben Roethlisberger is sitting out, you still got Flacco and the rest of the crew that are lined up in that division, and Carson Palmer as well. And we'll get to that, you know, shortly. But it's going to be real cool to see how all of this pans out.
Brian, do you have any thoughts on TJ Ward?
Yeah, you know, being from California, Pac-10 football is obviously, you know, pushed down our throat, whether or not we want to watch it or not. So I've caught several of Oregon's games last year. TJ Ward, you know, everything that I'm hearing from my sources is that TJ Ward going to assume the strong safety spot. Basically, you know, any Cleveland Brown fan will tell you that Abe Elam, the incumbent starter there, he just gives up way too many deep passes. His coverage over the top, he's susceptible to double moves. And like TP alluded to, you know, this is a division that is becoming a passing-type division. You know, historically, this is a running division, but they are a passing-type division. What Ward is going to offer, you know, he played free safety at Oregon, okay? So his ball skills, his instincts are probably a little better, even though I know he's a rookie, than Elam's, the incumbent starter. The only thing that I question really with this pick, I like the kid. You know, he is coming off an injury. I kind of agree with you. I think that maybe they selected him a little high. I think you could have got – I mean, if you look at just the safeties that were selected right around where he was selected, Nate Allen, Taylor Mays. I mean, I don't think there's too many people that would have selected this kid over those guys. But, you know, like I said to you previously, Mike Holmgren has a certain type of player that he looks for that fits what he's going to do. And he does have a proven track record. So some of, you know, unlike some of these other coaches and GMs, you know, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because I'm just assuming that, you know, he knows exactly what this kid's going to bring to the table. And real quickly before I pass it over to you, you know, the NFL is not like the traditional NFL where you have a free safety and a strong safety. You know, you basically need two safeties that can cover and can tackle. You basically have two free safety / strong safety hybrids. Your safeties have to be interchangeable so that, you know what, you can blitz the free safety, you can blitz the strong safety. So I think this pick really is going to give them some flexibility.
And you brought up a very good point coming in with the safeties that were picked after him, and I like both of them a lot more than I like T.J. Ford. I mean, maybe I'm a little lower on T.J. Ford than most people are, but I definitely think Nate Allen, although he is kind of the anti TJ Ford in my opinion. He's very good in pass coverage, but he's not that great at coming up and playing the run very well. And then Taylor Mays has coverage issues of his own, but he's a much better physical presence. But we've got a caller coming in from the 352. Caller, what's your name and what do you want to talk about?
Oh, hello, my name's Kyle, and I own HurricaneSportsNation.com, and I was just tuning in, just chilling out, and I was heard that you were talking about P.J. Ward and, you know, how it would affect the AFC North and everything, and I think something that will affect the AFC North the most, like, the Ed Reed and his injury of 6 weeks with a hip surgery. And, you know, the Ravens defense relies on Ed Reed to make those big time plays, make those key interceptions. And, you know, if you look at the history, you get, like, you know, six interceptions a year, and at least two of them are going to the end zone all the time. You know, it's going to be a devastating loss for the Ravens.
I completely agree with you. I mean, the loss of Ed Reed makes what was a passable secondary overall into a complete mush of a secondary. I mean, yes, they do have a kid I really liked coming out, Zbikowski,
yes,
as a replacement, but let's all face the 300-pound elephant in the room, that Zbikowski is not going to be Ed Reed. I mean, one of the major knocks on him coming out of Notre Dame was the fact that he wasn't a very good guy in pass coverage. So to say that he's going to step in and be a suitable replacement for Ed Reed is kind of a thing where you don't really know that. I mean, maybe he did get better, but I wouldn't put my money on Bukowski being anything near what Ed Reed was in pass coverage. And, I mean, we were going to cover the Baltimore Ravens a little bit later, but since the caller brought it up, I'm going to kick it over to you, Brian, and ask what you think about what does this mean? What does the Ed Reed being out for what could be 6 weeks or more saying about the Baltimore Ravens' chances to take the division this season?
Well, let me start off by saying, you know what, love having, you know, educated listeners and great callers who call in and, you know, give you those types of questions that are really going to make you think. So I know this isn't my show, but I just wanted to say thank you very much to the caller for calling in. You know, I will tell you this. On my show, I picked the Baltimore Ravens to not only win their division, but I think they're going to be the number one seed this year. And I know a lot of people think I'm crazy, but I'm going to tell you why. I don't think losing Ed Reed will be as nearly as big of an issue for this particular team as other teams. And I'm going to say this. What Ed Reed really offers this team, I mean, besides the playmaking ability, is the leadership in the back end. I think that they have enough leadership on this team that they should be able to overcome it. Now, can you overcome the playmaking ability? Obviously, you know what, whether it's Nakamura, whether it's Tom Zabikowski, you're probably not going to get that kind of production. But you know what? When Jimmy Leonard came in, who's now with the Jets, when he came in, nobody knew about him either. And you know what? The guy played fantastic, so good, in fact, that he earned himself a contract, you know, as a starter for the Jets. So all I'm saying is that, you know, we don't know enough, really. I mean, if we're going to be honest, we really don't know enough about either one of these young guys. I know they filled in from time to time about these guys yet to make a definitive decision. It will hurt them some, but this team is loaded. Okay, along the defensive line, this is a team we know is going to get pressure, so the back end's not going to have to hold up as long as some of the other teams might have to. You're going to have veteran leadership. DeJuan Landry, who I absolutely love. You know what? Last year he played a full 16 games, so that's going to help because you're going to have, you know, he's starting to become a veteran leader on this team. I don't think Ed Reed missing 4 to 6 games will be nearly as significant as it would have been, let's say, for example, you know, on a Rams team, on a Detroit Lions team, no pun intended, you know, TP. But on a younger team, I think it would have much more of an impact. But on a team like the Ravens, I think they understand that injuries are part of the game, and they're going to just continue to roll with the punches.
All right, we're going to kick this over to you, TP. What do you think about Ed Reed possibly being out for 6 or more weeks coming into the season? And does this mean – is this a death omen for the Baltimore Ravens season this season and their chances to win a championship?
Well, one, B, I'm definitely going to go against you right now. Ed Reed missing out of that defensive lineup is huge. I mean, that is huge. The impact that he is, he's a game changer. And like I like to do in Madden, I'm actually going to tell a secret that I do in Madden, is, you know, I like to be a game changer. You know, I'm actually a pass-happy defender. So if you're throwing the ball out, I'm trying to pick you off. And that's what Ed Reed does. Ed Reed can change the game, change possession, get the offensive ball, and attempts to score, which the Ravens used to have problems trying to score. But it's actually going to be cool, you know, to see the defense try to pick up his slack. And I'm actually pretty, you know, I'm good with Bukowski coming out of Notre Dame. He does have, you know, pretty good speed. He has strength, but he's not the type of safety like Ed Reed. You know what I mean? Ed Reed knows how to read quarterbacks, reading their vision, and also playing passing lanes and jump those lanes early so he can be in the right position to get the pickoff. And that's going to be huge because he kind of was like the bird on the hippo's back, you know what I mean, or the rhino's back. The rhino would be Ray Lewis, and the bird would be Ed Reed, the ball hawk. So it's going to be tough, especially when he comes back after week 6, to trying to fit in the chemistry and and he might be missing a step because it is his hip, you know. So, I mean, it could be tough. And I have a heavy heart because, one, I'm a Kane fan. I love my boy. So I definitely want to see Ed and Ray do their thing out there. Also, Willis McGahee, too. I'm actually wanting to see, you know, because Ray Rice is the talk now for the offensive side of the ball. But I want to see what Willis can do. Willis is still, what, he's like 28, 29. I think he still has a lot left in his tank. But that's on the offensive side of the ball. But I think they truly will miss him the first six games. The Ravens will struggle, but this defensive impact is still a presence on the field, and Ray Lewis is still running around out there regardless. So you got to get around him.
Thanks, Kyle, for calling in. If you want to stick around and add your input for the rest of the show, feel free. But if you don't, then just sit around and listen. Thanks a lot for calling.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, another thing, I want to stick with the Ravens for a little bit, and sorry to do this, but what do you guys think about Anquan Boldin, former FSU player, former rival of Ray Lewis and Ed Reed going at it at practice? In 2001, FSU played Miami, and I think it's my most favorite game I've ever watched, because if you go back and look at the rosters of both teams, you can see how many Pro Bowlers, Super Bowl winners, and how many people are just like awesome on that those rosters. Willis McGahee was a starter. No, Willis McGahee was a backup to Clinton. Like, come on, seriously? It's amazing how many people you can have on that roster that are two-time Pro Bowlers or more.
Well, we'll get to Quan real quick. I mean, Anquan Boldin is a major upgrade to everything that they had there at the wide receiver position. I mean, even that really old kid that I can't even remember his name right now. I'm sorry, but he's a major improvement over anything that the Ravens probably ever had at the wide receiver position. So I'm going to kick this over to TP first. Anquan Boldin is a major improvement. Also, they brought in Dante Stallworth to come in as well. Is this a fearsome pass offense that the AFC North has to deal with right now? And does this take away from the fantasy value of a Ray Rice, whose staple was the fact that the Baltimore Ravens didn't have enough of a passing
running? Well, basically, I think this definitely helps them. I don't know how this could hinder them at all. If you think about it, they have no passing game. That means they're putting more in the box to stop him from running the ball. If they have a passing game with species outside, like Bolton and Starwood, but the one thing that has me, you know, scratching my head is Dante still going to be the guy? Like, is Dante going to get the grab that he needs? Because the way he ended up in New England, how all he could do was run the hook and ladder play. And then when he went to Cleveland, too, he still was that type of receiver. I mean, he has that 4.3 speed, but it's something how he can't get separation from corners, and something how he runs his routes. I mean, he's definitely going to have to show me a lot, especially off of this stint that he had, that the year suspension and coming out of the, you know, the legal system or whatever. But I think Boldin will definitely change the game. Him and Todd Heap is still a presence out there on that field. If they could build chemistry, that run game is going to open up floodgates. And that should definitely put, like, you know, it's going to keep their honest seven there, you know, if they're running a 4-3 against them. And they'll have the holes to pick and choose against the Ravens offense. But I think that the running game will definitely be there. And to go off of what I don't know if that was Kyle or B, but come on, this is the U, man. Like, almost every year up until, what, last year, we had a whole bunch of first-rounders coming out of there, man. And it's always been talent coming out of Miami. So that's no question. It doesn't even have to look in the Florida State. I really only want to talk about Seminole talk in the kitchen because that's my rival. I don't even like to even think about maroon and gold at all. So I mean, other than that, I feel like Miami's okay, like with the U, but that's another whole situation. But the talent that came out of there, and definitely how they all been ganging up in the Ravens organization, has definitely been cool. Now that they have to put their college alumni stuff down, they have to, you know, join forces and put it together, which is actually cool to see.
All right, well, we'll kick it over to Brian to finish this segue of Ravens talk before we get back into the Cleveland Browns draft. And Quan Bolden, I'm going to ask you first, how Baltimore Ravens have not had a ever, if not for a really long time, and
Brian, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You know what? Sorry about that. I was going under an underpass. I caught most of what you said. I'll tell you what. I'm not a huge fan of Dante Stallworth. I think if you look at their other receivers, Clayton, the re-signing of Derek Mason, bringing in someone like Anquan Boldin, you know, like TP alluded to, Stallworth doesn't need to run routes. Basically, they're going to ask him just to run a nine route to pull the safeties away from the underneath stuff where Anquan's going to be working, where Mason's going to be working. I mean, people probably don't know this, but you're talking about Baltimore, you know, predominantly a run-first type team. They now have 2,000-yard receivers from last year on this roster. I mean, that's pretty impressive to me. I think Anquan Boldin is a major upgrade because not only does he benefit, but also he's going to help to set the table for the other receivers around him. Anquan Boldin is easily one of the top three most physical receivers in the league. He's big, strong, plays football like a basketball player. He boxes guys out. He is definitely going to help this team. Like TP also alluded to, he's going to help Ray Rice as well. I don't think you're going to see a huge drop-off in Ray Rice's production because instead of running against 8 and 9 man fronts now, the receivers are going to keep the defenses honest.
I definitely hear. I hear you there, man. James, are you back? I guess not. But he must be having a little technical difficulties on his end, so I'm sorry, Kitchen, that's going down. But how do you think that the Ravens are paying out? Do you really think that they're going to be atop the division? You think they're going to win the division outright without every starting the season?
Yeah, I'm. You know what? I go through, you know, every year, and as you know, and I go through and I analyze each team. I break down the offseason, the draft, that. I think the Ravens, in my opinion, right now, I mean, obviously everybody's going to look at the Colts because they were there last year, but I think they're the number one seed. If I had to pick a team and make them the incumbent number one seed, I'd pick them. Another unheralded signing, TP, that nobody really talks about is Shane Graham, the kicker from Cincinnati. A couple years ago, he was a Pro Bowler. And I think he's gonna help to bring, you know, they needed a strong-footed kicker there in Baltimore, so I think even he was an upgrade. It's just not, you know, kickers aren't necessarily talked of on the same level as an Anquan Boldin.
Hey James, are you back?
Am I back?
You're back.
All right, good. Okay, so let's move on and continue some of this Browns talk, because I think they did have a very interesting draft, to say the least. And we'll go with their second pick in the second round, Montario Hardesty, the running back out of Tennessee. He's got a very good speed for his size. He's good at finding the hole. His blocking is very good for who will be a rookie running back. He's very good between the tackles. He's a great in between the tackles kind of running back. But one of the problems that he has is he's not going to be the guy who's going to run around the corner and get to that second level very quickly. And he's also had a lot of injury issues. He had an ACL injury early in his college career, and he had an ankle injury later on after that. So I think if he can stay healthy, he's going to be a good third and short kind of running back, get him right in the middle of that hole. And I'm going to kick this around. I'll start with TP about Montario Hardesty out of Tennessee. One, is he going to start? And two, what do you think of the pick as a whole?
Well, one, I definitely don't think he'll start, especially the way Harrison ended out that season with that big 200-yard game season, 200-yard game that he had last season. And he definitely had more in his tank to show. There's no way Hardesty is going to take him off of his job. I mean, he's a good running back out of Tennessee. Tennessee is a national figure in college football, but let's think, I mean, the Volunteers didn't do too well last year with, you know, Lane Kiffin being their coach, you know, and I don't think he's going to, you know, improve the coaches that much for him to take Harrison's spot. That's going to be a very huge mountain for him to climb, but we'll see what he can do to be the second string and what type of impact he'll have on the team. It'll definitely be cool, but, I mean, the Browns are going to struggle, regardless if their running game is going to be effective or not. I really think that they have a lot more things they need to tool up on the offensive side, being their receiving core. And, I mean, they always have tight ends by committee, but we'll see what it looks like outside. And if their home is still the gunslinger, which isn't going to change, if you can't teach an old dog new tricks, it's going to be tough for him to fit balls in the windows that, you know, the AFC North is a very defensive-heavy type division, especially with the Steelers and the Ravens. I mean, those defenses bring it. So he's definitely going to have to, you know, fit the ball in the windows and take his high risk. And he might get picked off a lot, let alone he might get sacked if he's holding the ball too long.
Well, the one thing that Cleveland actually did right last season is they were eighth in the league in rushing. And a lot of – and so you have to ask yourself, one, is Jerome Harrison going to be as good next year? Because let's call a spade a spade. I mean, he's getting very downgraded in a lot of fantasy drafts at the moment. I mean, I've picked him up in as a second running back way in, like, three before the end in a lot of even larger 10 to 12-person leagues. So, Brian, I'm going to kick it to you. Is Jerome Harrison the guy right now in Cleveland? Can Hardesty usurp him at this point? And is that why there's a little discrepancy in the amount of yards that he's created? I'm talking about Harrison. And where he's being drafted in a lot of fantasy leagues.
Well, as you know, I'm a big, pretty big proponent of fantasy football as well. I'm not as high on Jerome Harrison, unfortunately, as you boys are. I like Jerome Harrison. I think he's a good player, a nice player. But I think the reason why Hardesty was drafted is because if you look over Jerome Harrison's career, he's one of those guys that could never really fully utilize his potential because he's often injured. Matter of fact, he didn't even play at all last year during preseason because he was nursing a I believe it was either an Achilles or injury or a knee injury. So he didn't even play any of preseason last year. Jerome Harrison probably open training camp. I'm not even saying the season. Training camp as a starter. I think really what's going to make or break this camp, something to keep an eye on, is going to be pass protection. If Hardesty can come in and learn the pass protection, which is probably the hardest thing for a running back, I think he'll get the nod. He's more physically gifted. He's relatively close to the same type of speed. Harrison is not a true burner. And I heard you guys giving, Harrison a lot of love. I would just like to point out, for a team that was as bad as Cleveland was last year, it's not very often that you see an offensive line that is this talented on a team that's this bad. I mean, you're talking about Joe Thomas, Pro Bowler, Eric Steinbach, left guard, Hanksley, center. They're going to have Tony Pashos at right tackle, Porkchop Womack at right guard. I mean, this is a pretty solid offensive line, and I'm not taking anything away from him, but if you open big enough holes, I mean, even a guy like me could through the offensive line. So let's give the offensive line their credit. I mean, of all the divisions, if you look at these four teams, there's a reason why these teams are always usually among the tops in rushing offense. It's because this division probably has the best offensive line core as an entire division in the entire NFL.
Okay, so we're going to bring in a friend of the show right now, Jeff Walkie. How are you doing, my friend?
Doing well, James. How are you guys this morning?
Would you like to jump in on this talk?
You there, James?
Yeah, if you can just add into what was just being discussed.
Well, as far as the running back situation there and actually Cleveland, I think it's still going to be a running back by committee approach. Actually, I think it's going to be a situation where Mangini's probably going to ride the hot hand. Obviously, with Hardesty, I mean, this kid was drafted high for a reason, even though he's had some durability issues coming out of Tennessee. He's definitely a natural athlete. You know, the kid's got excellent vision and instincts. He's tough and aggressive and runs very hard. He's got soft hands as a receiver out of the backfield. And even, like, as far as, you know, his pass block protection, I mean, he's come in and now granted, like I said, with camps not opening, getting ready to open, I should say, all reports, obviously, that, you know, out of Cleveland are indicating that, obviously, even though Hardesty's not signed, they've been quite highly impressed with the way he's adapted to the playbook, you know, as far as, you know, just, you know, picking up everything and doing it so well. I really think, to be honest with you, I mean, no disrespect to Harrison because I had him on a couple of fantasy squads last year and he paid huge dividends down the stretch and he was unbelievable. And I think it was the caller was just on actually was mentioning that, you know, they do have a solid offensive line that kind of gets overlooked. Even though we look at Cleveland as one of the laughing stocks of the league, you know, because they have been that way for a few years, they do got a really solid offensive line built around Joe Thomas and Eric Steinbach, and let's not forget Alex Mack, who they drafted, I believe it was last year or the year before, I think it was last year actually, as the rookie center. I mean, he's a very, very good, you know, solid technical center. So I think at the end of the day, you know, I think it's going to be Hardesty who's going to be, this kid's been getting a lot of raves, like high raves and reviews, you know, around the league and just around the fantasy world, and rightfully so. I think he's going to be their main back at some point, with Harris, obviously, the change of pace and third down back.
I hear you, man, but I really think Harrison still has a lot more in his tank to prove to the league. And it should be a very good, interesting battle to see how this running back situation pans out. I think Harrison is the back that knows the system. I don't think they'll bring in a rookie to take his spot early. I mean, Harrison's going to have to struggle first. I think they'll wait till preseason starts to kick off and see how his production is for those first couple of series if he does get a couple of carries. And if he is struggling and Hardesty is producing, then they'll make the move. But I think that's Harrison's position to lose. I really think that Harrison should be comfortable in his spot, especially the way that he ended up last season. He's a work in progress. So, of course, they have to believe in him. And one thing that Holmgren has always been big about is his run game. So we'll have to see how that all pans out in this upcoming season. Brian, are you still there?
Yes, sir. I'm still here.
So in general, how do you think that'll all pan out? You really think that
like Walkie was saying, you know, I mean, that was my assessment. I mean, I feel very, you know, my assessment is very close to what Walkie was saying. I think, like I said before, I think what it boils down to is how quickly can Montario Hardesty pick up the pass blocking scheme? Because the bottom line is anybody can run downhill. I mean, as far as a running back coming out of college, you have the talent. But the problem is it's the blitz pickup, it's the audible assignments, it's the nuances of the offense that actually require some study. So if this kid gets in there and is a student of the game, studies up, I think realistically, I think he's got a very good shot to open week one as the starter. That's the reason why right now I'm not recommending any Cleveland running backs to draft. I'm waiting until at least preseason week one to see how the dispersal of carries is going to be displayed.
All right, but let's get back to the last pick that I really want to cover.
James still having difficulties there?
Yeah, I think he's in a blender or something.
I don't know what's happening over there, man. Something happening with the griddle over there. I think it's burning his wires up.
Yeah.
I mean, real hot AFC talk.
You gotta tell him when he's host. You gotta tell him TP when he's hosting to stay out of the ice box. He's gotta stay in the kitchen.
Exactly. Well, if we can't, we can move it. We can move it out of the Browns. I don't want to drown the Browns, man. I mean, the Browns. Are
yeah, I agree with you.
They're at the cellar of that division. I really think they have a lot more to prove. If we want, we could carry this into the Steelers and see how you guys feel about the Pittsburgh Steelers. So. One, I'm going to start off with you, Brian, since we're claiming you the expert right now. How do you feel about the Steelers' production first defensively?
Well, let me start off just so I can get the ugly part out of the way right off the bat. I have the Steelers finishing third in the division this year, and I know a lot of Steelers fans are not going to like to hear that. But if you look at how the Steelers open this season, I think – three of the first four games, which are the games that Ben Roethlisberger is going to be suspended, I really honestly only see one winnable game. Now, that's not to say that they won't win a couple of the other ones, but they're playing tough teams. A couple of those games are on the road. So I just don't have the confidence in a guy like Byron Leftwich. They do have a decent running back in Rashard Mendenhall. They have tried to make improvements on the offensive line. Via Maurice Pouncey. But I think a guy like Willie Colon going down, I don't think people realize how big Willie Colon really was to this team. And I'm not talking size or stature. I'm talking emotional leader on that offensive line. I think that that's going to be a huge factor. This offensive line was shaky to begin with. They get rid of Santonio Holmes, who in my opinion is a top five route runner. I mean, this guy runs very precise, clean routes. And you're going to have one of these younger kids like a Mike Wallace. It'll probably be Mike Wallace, but, Linus Sweet, some of these other kids, somebody's going to have to step up. And I know we just drafted another kid this year that a lot of people are high on, but, you can't really, especially at the wide receiver position, you can't really rely on rookies in round three, four, five, six, to come in and immediately help. So what do you really have on offense as far as playmakers? Heath Miller is a nice tight end. He looks to him quite a bit. Rashard Mendenhall is a good running back. And Hines Ward is an aging star. I just don't know if they have enough firepower to really compete, especially when you consider that Big Ben's going to miss the first four games. And then you got to figure at least one or two more games just to get the continuity back. This defense will definitely be better as long as Troy can stay in there. It's a very good defense, for sure. But the problem is I just don't think they're going to be able to score enough points to stay with the other two teams in the division I have above them.
I mean, I agree somewhat. I think that their offense will struggle, because Ben being out, he is the captain of the offense, and he knows them well. He won two Super Bowls with that offense. It's going to be tough for either Leftwich or Dennis Dixon to, try and take the reins and get that chemistry, to be decent, to be somewhat in the NFL, let alone the AFC North, where defenses don't play around. The only defense that they probably could pick apart if they play them early would be the Browns. Other than that, I think that the Steelers will struggle. But defensively, the one person that I'm actually worried about, everybody's missing, is Troy Polamalu. I mean, he was injured all last year, and worried about his legs, and he could barely get around on the field. I mean, Polamalu has always been a threat. He's one of the top safeties in the game when he's healthy, but Polamalu, he plays reckless football, and that can actually be taking a toll on him, just like it is on Ed Reed. I mean, these boys are, always in every play and making big hits and stuff, but now you see that these guys are injured and out a lot of games. I'm wondering if that production is actually hampering their situation to playing good football around the NFL, and I'm wondering about Polamalu because he is the big anchor on that defense. He's the one that lays the lumber. He's picking up those safety blitzes. And hello?
Hello? Am I back on?
Yeah.
Everybody hear me?
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that, folks. We had a little technical difficulties with a microphone that might have shorted out a little bit, but I am back now. I'm sorry. What did I miss? Did we go over Colt McCoy or...
We have switched gears.
We're talking
about the Steelers now.
Oh, the Steelers. The Steelers have some major problems going forward. I mean, they lost a lot of very big talent. I see them fighting with the Browns to get to that third spot in the AFC North. And a lot of Steelers fans are really going to hate me. I mean, if they hated Brian for saying what he said, I mean, they're actually going to be in a battle with the Browns because they're going to be missing their star quarterback for at least 4 weeks and could be up to six. So they might lose all of those games, if not four of those six. And that's a big problem. They lost two wide receivers. They didn't lose just one. They lost two. They lost Santonio Holmes, who was their number two and Super Bowl MVP last season. And they lost Linus Sweed, who probably could have been the number three going forward this current season. So they've got some real problems at wide receiver. Their offensive line has not been the same since they won the Super Bowl the past couple of years, although they did pick up Maurkice Pouncey out of Florida, who's going to help the interior of that line. And they also lost what used to be Fast Willie Parker. And Willie Parker was a major part of that 1-2 punch, you know, that thunder and lightning kind of combination where you had a guy who was fast, who could tire, or a guy who could pound the rock, tire the defense out, and then a guy who could run around them for big gains later on. And that was huge for them. And they also didn't do too much in the draft. Outside of the first round with Maurkice Pouncey, they just drafted a whole bunch of depth, especially at the outside linebacker position, which made no sense. They picked up Thad Gibson and Jason Worlds, who are both going to be outside linebackers in the next level, when they already had James Harrison and Lamar Woodley, who were already very good at those positions. So to draft two players for depth in those positions just doesn't make much sense to me. So that's my kind of quick overview before we get back on what you guys were talking about. So what was the big topics that we were discussing before I got back?
Well, first it was defensively. I was talking about their production, and wonder, I'm actually wondering about Polamalu. Also, Brian hit on Cologne, how big of a hit they'll miss with Cologne, too. And in the chat room, they're saying that the Steelers may start off their first four games going 1-3. So how do you think they'll pan out their first four games, James?
Well, I think they could go 0-4, and they could go – I definitely am with the chat room that they could probably go 1-3 because I just without Roethlisberger and getting the new dynamics on that offense, with the offensive line as poor as it is, even with a very good first round run blocker and pass protector and Pouncey, I'm not sure if he's going to be playing the center or the offensive guard role in this Steelers offense, but one guy does not make a line. And when they lost Willie Cologne, they lost something very big in that offensive line because they don't, not only are they porous on the starting part, but they're also not that very deep, which I guess goes with the territory. But and add that to missing your multi-Pro Bowl, Super Bowl quarterback, I mean, and add that to replacing him with a guy with an extended delivery that's just asking for a sack lunch all day long. So we'll kick this over to Brian at the moment. Brian, are the first four games of the Pittsburgh Steelers season going to prevent them from making the playoffs this year? Or we can kick it to Walkie.
Yeah, I'm here, James. Well,
Walkie. Go ahead.
Here. No, I was just asking about the first four games. Obviously, you're looking at this schedule, obviously, I don't know how they come out of this 500. I mean, they got Atlanta, even though it's in Pittsburgh, it's in warm weather at the beginning of the season, then they have to travel to Tennessee the following week, and then, of course, an improving Tampa Bay team week three at Tampa. That won't be no walk in the park either. And then week four, obviously, they come back home against Baltimore, so... I'm with you guys on this. I mean, as far as the beginning of the schedule, if they can somehow clear the hurdle here and break 500 in these first four games, you know, it may be a boost of confidence for them as Roethlisberger returns to the field. Obviously, we know what he brings to the table. You know, his ability to extend the plays, he can throw the ball downfield. You know, he is fairly accurate, even sometimes he does hold on to the ball too long. You know, but part of the blame obviously falls back on that offensive line too, which has been pretty shoddy the past couple of years, average at best. Now, granted, they did lose Willie Colon, who I thought was their best and most consistent offensive lineman. And you guys had mentioned on Santonio Holmes, he's gone. Lima's sweet. I wasn't real high on him. I thought he was a big time college talent coming out of Texas, but he really hasn't transitioned well, you know, over to the pro game. It seems like he struggles with learning plays, and plus he can't keep himself healthy. I think the Steelers will get back to running the football. They're going to try to probably pound Mendenhall. You know, I don't know if they're going to plan on giving him the ball 20 to 25 times a game or what their plan is, but obviously he needs some help behind him. And right now all he has is Milwaukee Moore. They did bring in Jonathan Dwyer, whom I was a fan of in college. It'd be interesting to see if they use him or how much they even use him as a rookie. But I think, obviously, you know, Mendenhall is going to definitely need help because he's going to see a lot of 8 and 9 man, you know, defensive front. You know, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what defenses are going to try to do against Pittsburgh. As far as the quarterback situation is concerned, too, I know there's some doubts. Some people think that Dixon should be in there quarterbacking, and I got mixed feelings on both guys. But they did bring Lefty back, and Lefty knows the system as well. So, but I think, you know, he's another player or another quarterback that holds on to the ball too long. Plus, he has that long release, so which can set himself up for a lot of, you know, turnovers. But it would be interesting to see how this plays out.
All right, before we get to the caller from the 571, I'm going to quickly get my thoughts in on Jonathan Dwyer, who I thought was one of the bigger steals in the draft. Getting him in the sixth round was just wrong, in my opinion. I mean, I don't see him starting anytime soon, but I definitely see him as kind of that it's not going to be a change of pace because he and Mendenhall are kind of a very similar running back as far as styles go. And he's had his weight issues at Georgia Tech, but I think he was a majorly good pick. He's got great change of direction skills for a guy his size. He had a very terrible 40 time, but if you're pounding the rock in the middle, he's going to be just as good a back as any. So we're going to bring in the guy from the 571. Caller, what is your name and what do you want to talk about?
Yo, you know my name, boy. It's your boy, Serious. My man, TP, hit me up on the Facebook. Yo, get in there and talking about your squad, man. So, your boy here, what's cracking, fam?
Hey, man, what's going on, my friend?
What's good? Walkie, I hear you back there pouting that noise, man. You better hush that nonsense up, man. We have to go out today, man.
I'm ready. Throw that.
Yo. But, yo, man, real talk, man. I mean, Stella's, man. Here's the deal. We are who we are. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know, we got some issues offensive line-wise. You know, Ben Roethlisberger ain't going to be there for the first four. But I said this yesterday, I said this the day before that, and I'm going to keep saying it. You know what I'm saying? We are a resilient bunch, you know what I'm saying? What we was able to do via the draft, picking up that back from Georgia Tech is awesome. Mendenhall is going to be able to hold on to the football and get the job done. I do agree with you when you say a lineman Swede hasn't panned out. I was one of the cats that was really on the lineman Swede bandwagon when we picked him up out of Texas. But he got the drops, can't hold on to the ball, can't run his routes properly, you know what I'm saying, which is why a year later we went and scooped up Mike Wallace, who, you know, made an immediate impact for us last year. So, you know what I mean, it's going to be fun being a Stella fan this year, you know, but I was curious to hear what everybody else was talking, so bring it at me, man, bring it at me. Shout out to my man TP, you know, one of the chefs in the joint, you know what I'm saying, thanks for getting your boy on the joint.
Hey, serious, it ain't me right now, but the chat room is saying you guys are going 1-3 out of that first four. So how do you feel you guys are hang on. How do you feel you guys are flourish after starting off 1-3? They said that you guys will struggle at least trying to be 500 the first four. You guys got Atlanta, Tennessee, then you got Tampa Bay, which everybody's saying that you guys will take that win. But it's down there, listen, it's down there in Tampa Bay, too, and then the fourth game is against those Ravens, too. So how do you feel you guys are going to pan out the first four?
Honestly, I would be surprised if we're not at 500. You know, the Atlanta Falcon game, I see as pretty much dominating now from start to finish. And, you know, you can call me biased, you can call me crazy, but the Atlanta Falcons' whole premise is running the football. And we haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher since, you know, Ray Rice did it last year, and before then it was 2007 to see a lot of 100-yard rushers. They're not going to be able to run the football. Same thing with Tennessee. You know what I'm saying? Who knows what's going to happen with Tennessee? I mean, I don't know if Chris Johnson still got done or not. We don't know if he's going to hold out. VY can't hit the broadside of a barn standing on, you know, standing anywhere. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, if we play containment on Tennessee and make them one-dimensional like we've been able to do for the past couple years we played them, they'll be fine. You know, the only game that I'm really, like, open my eyes about is the Baltimore Ravens, because it's a divisional game. You know, they do have some added weapons, although Ed Reed's not going to be in the defense because he's not on the PUP list for the first 6 weeks. But, you know, playing the Ravens a divisional game, you can never tell it's a divisional game. So, honestly, if we break out of this joint out going into our bye at 3-1 or 2-2, I'll be fine. This 1-3 talk is hilarious. You know, cats in the chat room, though, obviously don't know football. You know what I'm saying? Trying to say we're going to go 1-3. That's crazy. That's like,
Twitter.
That's like.
I got a little something there. Right there. That's just unfortunate right there. Because I'm going to be completely honest here. I don't even see the Pittsburgh Steelers winning one of those games, because people are sleeping on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now. That's right. I said without Ben Roethlisberger and without a decent offensive line, and those wide receivers are going to need a little time to come into their own. I think that it is very possible. I'm not going to say it's likely. I'm not going to say it's going to happen. But I think it's going to be a lot closer game than people are giving credit for, because they've got a lot of good rookies coming in, and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. Not this year. This year they're probably going to be another top 10 pick, but I would not be surprised if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, with their new wide receivers, their new middle of that defensive line, if they don't scare a few people early on because people aren't going to be taking them seriously.
Did you say the Steelers?
Aurelius Ben.
Go ahead, my man. I mean,
Aurelius Ben and Mike Williams are both very good wide receivers to start off with as rookies. So if they can come into their own, which is very hard for a rookie wide receiver, but if those two do what they can do, then I could see them dropping somebody who they should beat. I mean, the Steelers should beat today, but I wouldn't be surprised if it fell the other way. But we're going to bring somebody in from 07 before we get back to you, Sirius.
Yeah.
Call 407. What's your name, and what do you got to talk about?
What's going on, guys? It's Mose. I had to call in. Enough of the Steelers bashing. I can't believe the Steelers, besides Sirius, because it's his team, nobody's giving this defense any credit. I mean, you guys really think the Steelers are going to start off 1-3 or 0-4? To me, that just sounds crazy. I know Roethlisberger is not going to be there for the first 4 weeks, but defense wins games, and this defense, with Polamalu back, I mean, is going to revert back to their Super Bowl year. It's not like they're old and washed up. We're not talking about, you know, certain teams. You know, I think they are going to be fine. They're going to run the ball a lot. Leftwich is going to play within his realm. And, you know, I definitely expect him to win 2 games, if not 3 games, while Roethlisberger is out. I mean, I don't know why everyone is looking at the Steelers saying Roethlisberger, this is like an offensive juggernaut. This is not Peyton Manning's team. This is not Tom Brady's team. You know, I mean, yeah, the Tennessee Titans are a good team, but I see that definitely as a winnable game for Pittsburgh. They can shut Chris Johnson down. Yes, I'm saying it. Chris Johnson ran for 2,000 yards last year, but this year is this year, and there's a trend that players coming off huge seasons don't always perform the same way they did the year before. Yeah, I know Chris Johnson is circling 2,500 yards, but Pittsburgh is also going to be saying, okay, everyone's doubting us. Everyone's saying we're going to be 1-3. I love the head coach, Mike Tomlin. I think he fires up the boys. And let's be honest, this steel curtain has been known to win games by defense. And the biggest player on that team is not Ben Roethlisberger. It is Troy Polamalu. And with him back playing on that defensive unit, I can't believe people are saying 1-3 or 0-4. There is no way the Tampa Bay Bucks are going to knock off the Steelers, James. I'm sorry. There's just, yeah, the Bucks will be good this year. They'll be better than last year. But that's like saying, you know, that Cleveland's going to start the season 4-0. I just don't see it. I think Pittsburgh should get a little bit more credit. It's not an offensive juggernaut team. Ben Roethlisberger is a good quarterback for them, but they can win games without Big Ben.
Well, you got the saying wrong, Moses. Defense wins championships. Offense wins games. Offense, if you can't score, you can't win. And with that offense comprised the way it is, they're going to be relying a lot on Rashard Mendenhall. They're going to be relying a lot on Jonathan Dwyer. And they're going to be relying a hell of a lot on that offensive line to do what they have to do. And I don't have any confidence in that offensive line to do anything.
Hey, James, can I chime in?
Yes. With Polamalu back, I mean, we've seen it with a lot of teams over the periods of time. I mean, when you look at the Indianapolis Colts defense, I mean, without Bob Sanders, they're pitiful. With Bob Sanders, they're good enough to win a championship. And the same thing is true with Troy Polamalu. When he got injured, the Steelers defense went to crap. And I'm not underestimating this very potent defense, but I just don't see where the points are coming from on this team. I mean, there's going to be serious problems going forward with that. And I'll
break it down
first, and then I'll get right back to you, sir, because I know you're chomping at the bit to try and shut it down here. But Mose.
Yes.
You have any response for what I just said, or?
Well, you know, I know it is the logo or the signature saying defense win championships, but it also starts with winning games. And maybe because I'm a Chicago Bears fan, I'm used to having an awful quarterback and a defense that can win games for you. I mean, there's something that's called turnovers into points. And if the defense puts up 2 touchdowns and they're only giving up 10 points a game, well, guess what? I mean, there's a way that they can control the clock, they can play Steelers smash-mouth ball, and win the game. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say that the Steelers are going to go 4-0, but, you know, I would definitely say the Steelers go 2-2 in the first 4 games. And personally, you know, call me crazy, we did the blog, I picked the Steelers win the AFC North next year to rebound like so many teams do in the NFL, bad season to a good season. And I feel the Ravens and the Steelers are the head of the class for this division.
Well, I mean, Mose, I'm not going to disagree with you per se, but if you look at the defenses that won each conference's conference championship last season, the Colts were, I believe, a bottom half of the league in defense, and so were the New Orleans Saints. I mean, if they weren't bottom half, they were damn near close. They weren't top 10 defenses by any stretch. So with that, I know Sirius is chomping at the bit. So, Sirius, why don't you tell me what's on your mind?
Well, honestly, I mean, there was a lot to digest there, but I'm going to deal with this in order. A caller asked how we were going to score points. And I think you or somebody else just hit it. Our defense could turn points on the board. You forgot about Hans Ward. You forgot about Ethan Miller. You forgot about Mike Wallace. You forgot about Space. You forgot about the weapons that we did acquire. Randall Law coming back is going to be tremendous for us and putting points on the board. You know, as long as we don't turn the ball over and as long as Leftwood gets the ball out of his hands, you know, we should be fine as far as putting points on the board. Then, you know, I mean, I agree with the other caller. I mean, if we go 2-2, you know what I'm saying? That's a win going into our bye, coming back and playing Cleveland. You know, so I mean, that's why I made the comment a few minutes ago. I mean, Cats who honestly thought that we were going to go 1-3 or 0-4, you know, are not thinking clearly. You know what I'm saying? And I really can't wait for the season to get popped off. So you know, all these naysayers can kind of be like, okay, you know what I'm saying? We have to respect the Steelers. You know what I'm saying? We were a top 5 defense last year without Troy in the lineup. I mean, and Cap seemed to forget that. Troy Polamalu missed the whole damn season, and we were still the top 5 defense in every statistical category. You know, and, you know.
But I want to bring Brian in because, I mean, he's been waiting patiently, and I know he's got something to add to this conversation. Brian, what do you got to say?
Well, while I got Sirius on the phone here, I just want to ask him real quickly, and I'm not pointing fingers or anything. I'm just asking a serious question as a fan. Who's going to play left tackle for you?
We just picked up somebody who played with the Jets. I think his name is Adrian Jones.
Jones. How many starts does Adrian have?
I believe in his career, like 40-some-odd. I think if the number's correct, like 46, if my numbers are right. I got to check that when I get back to the crib.
Yeah, the only reason why I asked Sirius, I didn't mean to step on you. Go ahead.
I mean, he wasn't starting for the Jets.
Right. Here's my line of thinking, Sirius.
On a backup New York Jets offensive tackle.
But here's my...
He played with the Chiefs and the Texans, too.
And you're also doing a lot of plays on Brian Leftwich getting rid of the ball. His issues, especially with sack numbers, have been well documented. Even with a good Jacksonville Jaguar offensive line, he still had a lot of problems getting the ball out of his hands quick enough to not either A, not get sacked, or B, not get picked off when everybody knew where he was going about half a second before he got the ball out of his hands.
I mean, we can honestly argue back and forth about Byron Leftwich's release. He can argue about how he held onto the ball until it blew in the face. But, I mean, when the rubber meets the road, I mean, he's going to be turning and putting the ball in the Minute Hall's gut and, you know, quick slanting and getting the ball out of his hands. You know, he knows going in he's the man. He knows what he's capable of. He knows what he has to do. He knows what we're capable of as long as he doesn't F it up. You know, the issue in Jacksonville was he was the man. You know what I'm saying? And you know, that was before they got Maurice Jones-Drew. That was before they got, you know, a decent coach. You know what I'm saying? So Byron Leftwich is mature. He knows what he's supposed to do, and he's going to get it done. You know, and if he doesn't, I'm more than confident in Dennis Dixon coming in and doing what he's supposed to do.
All right. Brian, right before we kind of try to move on a little bit from the Pittsburgh Steelers talk, because we do have two more teams left in this division, the two that are actually going to make strides for the playoffs, in my opinion. Is there anything else? We're going to go right around. Any last words about the Pittsburgh Steelers before we move on?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to make it a big debate. Like you said, we got to move on. I'm going to make a couple key quick points here. Pittsburgh Steelers defense was not ranked in the top five in every statistical category. And I don't have the notes in front of me, but I'm pretty sure they were more like ranked in the top, 10 to 12 in most statistical categories. They do have a good run defense. They do have good pass rushers. And bringing back Brian McFadden, who knows the system at corner, will definitely help. But there's just way too many concerns on this offensive line. And also, just real quickly before we move on, let's say they go 2-2 first four games. Real quickly, let's just look at the next five. They play Cleveland in week six, who is a divisional opponent. Then they go to Miami, to New Orleans Saints, to Cincinnati, and then they play New England. I mean they got a really rough stretch.
That's a very good point, and I'm actually picking up the defensive numbers right now. So I'm gonna kick this to TP and ask if he has any more anything else he wants to bring up about the Steelers.
Well, not really, because as series knows, I don't really like talking about the Steelers, man. I think they'll go 0-16 too. I'm just joking, man. But I just had to throw that in there, but. I'm actually mad and serious with saying that they're going to dominate the Falcons top to bottom that game, especially with, all the holes in their team right now. I think the Falcons will flourish that game because Matt Ryan is not going to be playing around, let alone they just missed the playoffs, on the outside looking in. They had a good season last year, and the year before that, they made the playoffs as well. So you can't take anything away from the Falcons. I do agree with Mo's. I mean, Chris Johnson did run for 2,000 yards, but if it's not him and Vince Jackson, those two are bust. So the Titans actually could be a walk-on, like if that offensive chemistry isn't there. So I think they can surprise some people, but it'll be tough for them to get at least 3-2 wins. But it's gonna be a struggle. But the next couple of string of games after the bye, I mean, they can get Cleveland, but like the Dolphins, the Saints, also the Bengals, and then the Patriots. Those are all games that they are gonna struggle.
All right. I've just got the statistics up. Pittsburgh Steelers were 13th in points allowed, 5th in total yards allowed, 16th in passing yards, and 3rd in rushing yards allowed. A lot of that had to do with the missing of Troy Polamalu, but these guys were not top five across the board last season. And I'm going to bring this – I'm going to give you, Mr. Steeler, one last chance. Make your last point, and then we're going to be moving on to the Baltimore Ravens.
Hello?
Serious.
Oh, yeah, I hear the question. My fault, Sam.
Do you have anything left to say about your Pittsburgh Steelers? Why they should be considered a threat to this division?
Well, honestly, I mean we've been the constant in that division for years. You know what I'm saying? We pretty much have owned the division. The Ravens have came up. And taking the division 1 year, and we taking it back. And Cincinnati took it last year, and we'll probably take it back this year. This is arguably one of the toughest divisions in the league. Next to the NFC East, in my opinion. I just honestly believe in the caliber of ball club that we put out there on the field every Sunday. I believe in my head coaching staff, and I believe in my players to be able to get it done. We understand what's set before us. We understand the obstacles and tribulations that we got to overcome, but, it's time for the cream to rise to the top. And if I had to go to war with any squad, I'm taking my squad from the 412 because that's what we do. We stand up and we fight and we get stuff done. So, it's going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out. But, when the rubber meets the road, the 412 stands strong. You hear me?
All right. Thanks a lot for that. And we're going to bring in a caller from the 609. Maybe he wants to get into this, or maybe he wants to get into some Ravens talk. Caller from the 609, what's your name and what do you want to talk about today?
Hey, it's Sturge in the house, guys. Yeah, with the Ravens, quick question. In my fantasy league, Yeah, I like their defense. I like Ray Rice and stuff. I like the acquisition of Bolden. My question is, you know, like in a quarterback league, normally you have like your six or eight quarterbacks in the draft. But how do you think Flacco's going to do this year? I mean, is Flacco worth drafting like in a fifth round? You load up with your two running backs and you say your two receivers and take Flacco maybe in the fifth round. You know, how do you see, you know, with Baltimore, they got a great week 14, 15, 16 when the playoffs are, but will they, if they have the lead all the time, will he pass or will they more run? What's your feeling with Baltimore and Flacco going forward this year to the next level?
Okay, I'm going to kick that to Walkie because he's definitely our fantasy guy. I do have my opinions on it as well, but I'm going to let Walkie take this away. Actually, no, we won't. I'll take this one first. I mean, yes, if they get the lead early, then yes, they will run the ball because that's what Baltimore does. Baltimore runs the ball a whole lot. But the big thing is that even if they don't get ahead early, Baltimore's still going to be a run-first team. I have high doubts that that they're going to put the game in Joe Flacco's and Anquan Boldin's hands more so than they did last year. Maybe a little more, but not too much more than they did last year. I think they're going to still want to control the clock. They're going to want to run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And with Ray Rice doing as well as he did last season, I think that yes, he's a viable backup for your fantasy league, but I wouldn't count on him as your starter.
Okay.
And I'll kick that to Brian. Brian, what do you think about Joe Flacco's fantasy value?
Well, I got a couple questions real quickly for the caller. What size league are you playing in?
12-man PPR. And here's the thing, sir, is when you get a quarterback, you get a point for every 20 yards. Once they hit 300 yards, they get another 15 bonus points. Once they hit 325, another 15. 350, another 15. So sometimes you can get a guy who could throw, you know, like say 350 yards, a couple touchdowns, may give you 50, 60 points that week. But my thing is, every time I've won leagues, I've never had one of those top five quarterbacks. Because like last year, Roethlisberger was a sleeper. Eli Manning was a sleeper last year. So you can get guys, maybe Cutler this year, guys in the fifth, sixth, seventh round who are putting up almost as good of numbers as your top six quarterback that may go in the first or second round. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I mean, it definitely helps to know that you're in a PPR league. Here's the only thing I would say. I like Joe Flacco, and the other thing I really like about Flacco and Ken Cameron's offense, that's our offensive coordinator, is they have a Don Coryell-type offense, which basically means they have a vertical passing game. You don't see a lot of dinking and dunking from the Ravens. Their passing is mainly set up to remove the safeties from the box. So you are going to see some deep passes, and Flacco has that arm strength. My question would be, who else is available at that spot? And I know, you know, we're not going to know. For example, I'm really high on a guy named Matt Schaub, the Texans quarterback. I think you could probably get him in round 4 or 5. Donovan McNabb. I just think there's other guys that will be available around round 4 or 5 that you're talking about that would give you better value.
Okay.
I think that Joe Flacco is probably somebody I would pick up later in the draft as kind of an emergency type situation. He wouldn't be my primary quarterback.
Okay. Last year I had Flacco and I had Romo, and I got one in the fourth, one in the fifth. What hurt me is I went with two wide receivers, Andre Johnson and Calvin Johnson, and my first two picks. Then I got Thomas, who got hurt. And our league, we're running backs. You get 10-point rushing touchdown. So it's a very heavy running back, quarterback, receiver. You know what I mean? So that's why I was wondering what you guys were thinking. Hey, you know, do you waste? You know, again, I've had Manning and different and Breeze and different guys and never won that league with a good quarterback. I've always won it with a backup quarterback, you know. So that's why I was trying to get your opinion. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for calling in. I would look. I'll try and get a middle-tier QB. I think Flacco is a very, very good guy you could draft later in the rounds on potential if he's there, because he definitely has the potential to put up big numbers.
You think Cutler will do anything with Mike Ward? You gotta stay away from him.
Let's go to TP before we dive too deep into this. I want to get TP's thoughts on Joe Flacco as a fantasy quarterback. Is he going to be better than he was last year? What do you think?
That's an easy answer. I think Flacco will have better numbers this season because he has better targets than he's had in previous years. And it all depends on if Heap is available throughout a full season, too. Heap has been an injury-prone tight end that has been a big target for the Ravens year in and year out. And it won't be too much pressure for Heap to catch the ball a lot because now he has Antoine, he also has Stallworth. Hopefully, Stallworth can bring a key addition to that offense. Because if those two start doing damage early, the Ravens' offense is going to be very big, and it's going to be hard to stop them, let alone the run game is going to be there. So if they, like a lot of people that made, or a lot of teams that made the key addition of having good running backs come in, when defenses gear up to bring the box in, and if they run a play action, the defense is deceptive to getting burnt easy. And if Flacco throws a big ball up top, if he could get it up top to Anquan, or Stallworth, if they're open up top, or let alone Anquan running his slant routes and everything underneath, it could be huge for the Ravens' production offensively. And I think that'll be a big pickup if you can't score Flacco early in the fantasy draft.
All right, thanks a lot, TP. And we're going to bring in a caller from the 707. Caller.
Come on, Griffin.
Hello, caller from the 707. All right, then let's just
hi, guys.
On.
Hello?
Hello, yeah, so, caller, what's your name and what you got for us?
Hey, my name is John. I got a couple quick questions for you. Based off the ADP, where would you guys go, maybe off the top 10? Who would you are willing to draft ahead of the ADP in the top 10, maybe quarterbacks, top 20 running backs, and the top 20 receivers? And my last question is, why doesn't more people do the tiering system? I just think that's so valuable to use the tiering when you're.
Well, the tiering system, I don't know why. I personally do use the tiering system for most of my drafts. Like, I will always take a number one overall quarterback, or the quarterback who I think is going to score the most points, or at least the most points over the next guy in line, or the guy who'll be able to get the next round, over maybe the running back that, because people like to jump on running back very early in drafts, mostly because the running yards are worth more points. But really, I mean, would you rather have the eighth running back or the first quarterback? And if you ask me, it's a no-brainer. And then, and another thing that I want to bring up with this, because this is a very good question, why don't people take their DSTs earlier? I mean, if you get a top DST, the only time you're going to have to worry about subbing this DST is when you're looking at a bye week. I mean, DST starts for you at least 15 weeks out of the season most of the time. I mean, there are some extenuating circumstances, but yeah, they do. A top DST won't score you a lot of points, but if you can get one that's a lot better than most of the other DSTs in the league, with a mid-round pick before you start picking your bench running backs and bench wide receivers and stuff like that, why don't you go for your DST before these other backup positions? And I'll start with TP on this one. We haven't heard from TP a lot, so I want to know what your thoughts are on both the caller's questions and the question that I brought up myself.
Well, basically, throw his question back. Caller, can you restate your question, please?
Okay, I'm sorry. I wanted to know, what would you draft ahead of their average draft position? Say, the top 10 quarterbacks. You got, say, for instance, I like Cutler, rated at 7. I think he's going to outperform that position. So what out of the top 10 quarterbacks, top 20 running backs, top 20 receivers, who do you think is going to outperform their drafting? And one last thing, I don't know why everybody's on these receivers so much. If you remember last year, Austin Miles, he wasn't even drafted in a lot of leagues. Sidney Rice, wasn't even drafted in the leagues. So you have in these top, you know, 20 receivers that are going to be available, if you think it's going to happen this next year, which very could happen, you know, these breakout receivers. So everybody's loading up on those receivers where you have a chance to pick them up, the breakout receivers in the middle of the season.
And that's a very interesting question. It's going to be real tough to answer, and it was Miles Austin, not Austin Miles. But it is tough to rate the receivers that do go under the radar. And see, I know my co-host, if he's still here, Moe, he's loving the fact that you're a big Cutler fan because he's a Bears fan. So, you know, Cutler with Mike Marsh would be pretty interested with the offensive team. But the way Cutler, he holds himself in games, I'm really hoping that his consistency is still there. But we'll have to see how that all pans out. The person that I think that, you know, will flourish this year, I think it'll really be T.J. Uzmanzadeh. I think Uzmanzadeh has something to prove, let alone he's in a team with a system that, you know, this is his second year. You didn't hear much from him last year. I think receiver-wise, he'll make big noise and some damage out there in the NFC West, but we'll have to see how that all pans out. Running back, I think this is Frank Gore's year. I think Frank Gore could do something. I think this could be an NFC West season where it's going to be a lot of offensive production. That's a division that's up for grabs. So I think it could be Frank Gore and Uzmanzadeh for the running back and receiver situation. I don't know too much about Cutler being the guy to go with for the quarterback situation because of how interception prone he is, you know. And even if he does have a good offensive coordinator, he still has to get the job done. He still has to connect the dots, and I don't think that's the guy right now. Flacco wouldn't be a bad decision, that, you know, another caller that threw out there. I also want to see what Brady still has in his tank, even though but Brady probably will get snatched up quickly. And Chad Henne might be a guy that may go under the radar that might still be there available for you to be selected.
Yeah, I think this
year. We'll kick this to Brian, and then we really got to get a hold of this Baltimore Ravens draft, and then we got to do a really quick synopsis of what the Bengals like to do with the top two. So Brian, real quick, can you post these caller's questions?
You got it. Real quickly, I'm gonna hit these real quick because I know we got to move along. Caller, get a pen and paper here. I'm going to give you two running backs, a couple receivers, and a quarterback. Like I just said, Matt Schaub, he's rated right now in draft books as the sixth or seventh best quarterback, although if you look at his average draft position, it's around five or six. I think he'll outplay that draft position. I also think if you look at running backs, here's my big sleeper that I'm going to use in my money leagues, Jonathan Stewart, okay? D'Angelo Williams is being drafted higher than him, but Jonathan Stewart actually was more productive last year, and towards the end of last year, Jonathan Stewart actually got most of the carries. So I think Jonathan Stewart's a guy you can get in round four that's going to vastly outplay that drafting position. The other guy that I really personally like quite a bit that other people aren't as high on is Michael Turner. Okay, he's coming off an injury. Right now, you know, I've seen him drafted in round two. I think if you can get him at the end of round one, he's going to be a great pickup. And then one guy that TP had mentioned, Mike Crabtree, wide receiver from San Francisco. He had a really good chemistry with Alex Smith towards the end of last year. Had over 600 yards receiving in basically a half a season. Was averaging 4 to 5 receptions a game. I think with a full training camp, I think that you're going to see a much, big improvement on those numbers. And right now, he's ranked as the 20th best wide receiver.
All right, so we're gonna go ahead and move on to the. Actually, first I want to thank you for calling, caller, and it was some good conversation. But we've really got to hit up this Baltimore Ravens draft before we. Really quickly, I'm going to just bullet this out. I love that Baltimore Ravens draft. I gave a definite A in my book. It was, I think, one of the top three drafts in this draft this year. Sergio Pinto does have injury issues that you really have to be concerned about. I mean, it's a knee problem that they discovered during the combine. That was really shocking to talk. Prior to that, he was a top 10, top 15 pick. And And then got another really good player with I think is a great pick for them. You've got Terrence Coates, the mountain of a man, nose tackle.
He just called
out of Alabama. He's a really big guy, and that's something that's got to scare a lot of teams coming into the future, is having Terrence Cody lined up right next to Haloti Ngata. That's six, seven hundred pounds of beef spread between two guys. I mean, TP, you're an offensive lineman. You know better than anybody that if you have that much ass sitting in front of you, you're going to be scared as all hell. And nobody's running on that team, and Ray Lewis is going to have a field day. And I'm going to quickly go over these next two picks that I like a lot, Ed Dickerson and Dennis Pitta. I mean, they both have a chance to start because the incumbent right now has been plagued by serious injury issues that have limited his play time, so having these two on are going to be big for Joe Flacco. And adding another pair of weapons if they go for a two tight end set that are gonna really help this offense along, and they are also decent, not great, but pretty decent blockers to look at as well. So I'm gonna go to TP, ask him what he thinks about this Baltimore Ravens draft.
Well, it's tough with the Ravens because the Ravens have definitely retooled outside of the draft. I think that all the additions that they made, you know, outside of the draft, more or less that the draft is going to be, we're going to have to wait and see what they do in the preseason and see what type of additions, you know, if they do make the roster. You know what I mean? Because they're pretty stacked as is. I don't think too many of the draft selections we'll make wavelengths throughout the division, throughout the season, but we'll see how that all plays out. I really think that the guy to watch for the Ravens will be Bolden, because Bolden has a chip on his shoulder of not completing the job in Arizona, you know, and he has a team right now where he can do some work. It's a full system offensively and defensively at that, too. So, other than that, I'm really hoping that Ed could, you know, get healthy, get out of his therapy situation, and be back on the field to help those guys out. But also, you know, with the additions that they made with Stallworth and Bolden, it's exciting to see for the Ravens this season.
All right, we're going to keep this over to Brian. Brian, what do you think about the Baltimore Ravens draft as a whole? Are there any players that you think are going to really stand out in the next couple of seasons going forward for them?
I really like the Baltimore Ravens draft. I mean, the one thing is when you talk about Ozzie Newsome, their general manager, you can't help but give this guy respect. He does a phenomenal job of drafting for this team. This team is annually one of the better drafting teams. I do hear what TP is saying as far as this team does have a lot of talent. And rather than talk about the draft picks, because you guys have already talked about that, I just want to make a quick analysis. I thought it was ironic that they did not draft a safety, knowing Ed Reed's situation. So all this talk about Zbikowski and Nakamura, obviously the front office has some serious confidence in these guys to be able to get the job done. So, you know, that's basically all I would say. And obviously Sergio Kendall in round two from Texas, a lot of people think, you know, he was one of the better pass rushers in this draft.
Okay, That's some good stuff. Sirius, I see you're still on here. Sirius, do you have anything to add about Baltimore Ravens draft, Baltimore Ravens in general?
Well, honestly, I hate to do this, but I'm going to have to agree with TP. You know what I'm saying? I think the Ravens made more noise outside of the war room than they did inside the war room, you know, with the addition of Bolden, addition of Stallworth. You also got to think, you know what I'm saying, they went out and got DB help, you know, picking up Kim Hamlin from the Cowboys. And I think Kim Hamlin is going to play with a chip on his shoulder, make my life good, miserable, and interesting off. But, it's going to be a couple of years, in my opinion, before these draft class players actually step up and make some moves. I agree with the previous caller said. I mean, they must have some really good confidence in Zbikowski not to go after a safety, knowing Ed Reed's condition. I mean, Ozzie Newsom, I'm a Celtics fan, but I got to respect the man for what he's been able to do as far as acquiring talent and putting pieces in place to be competitive and successful. So we'll see what happens, man. We'll see what happens. But, I mean, what the Ravens was able to do this offseason, it should be commended. You know, they're gonna be decent this year. I can't even argue that.
All right, thanks for that. And we're going to do a quick move on to the Cincinnati Bengals, who I think are still the favorites to win the division this season, and I think a lot of people disagree with me. But before we get into this offseason talk, TP has some good speculation-type news that I think we should get into before we start talking draft and offseason moves. TP, you still there?
Speculation towards which one? The
specific wide receiver that might be joining the Cincinnati team there.
Well, the news is that Terrell Owens has actually been working out with Carson Palmer, and who's to say that that this all pans out, because they haven't initialized the deal yet, but it's looking like that it's going to fall through, that T.O. may be a Bengal this upcoming season. So one interesting thing that I've actually noticed, that Ocho Cinco had his TV show, and right behind it was T.O., and they said that Palmer and T.O. have been working out all summer long. So to all the teams that he's been meeting up with and everything that's been going on with T.O., I'm actually wondering if has this been a plan all along or what. So I'm wondering how everybody else would feel about T.O. actually joining the Bengals, and two of the loudest receivers in the NFL being in one offense. So, James, how do you feel about Ocho Cinco and T.O. being together in Cincinnati?
Well, I mean, I think I always had much love for Terrell Owens. I think he's a player. He's a little bit of a diva, but there are a lot of divas in the NFL. So I think this would be a great pickup for a single season. As far as the Cincinnati Bengals are concerned, I don't like what they have outside of Ocho Cinco, but if you bring in a Terrell Owens to this offense, then you've got a lot of weapons for Carson Palmer to look at. You've got Jermaine Gresham, the new tight end that they picked up in the first round. He's got some injury issues, but he's as pure of a pass receiving tight end as you can find in the league. Then you've got T.O., who's always coming into camp in shape and ready to play. He'll be definitely better than what they have at the number two position right now. Then you've got Ocho, so who are you going to cover? It'd be just very difficult to cover the pass, and you've still got to worry about the run as soon as Cedric Benson's suspension gets all over. So I think that'll be a major coup for the Cincinnati Bengals, especially if they can get him at the right price, which I think is looking more and more likely. And let's not forget that T.O. was actually on Ocho's show not too long ago. I think last week he was chilling at Ocho's crib on his reality show. So we're gonna kick this over to Brian and ask him what he thinks about the possibility of T.O. Moving on to the good state of Ohio next.
A lot of people aren't going to like this, but you know what? I am not a big fan of T.O. going to Cincinnati. I gave a lot of admiration and respect to Marvin Lewis in the front office when they passed on him the first time and decided to bring in Antonio Bryant. And I'm going to disagree with you, actually. I think if Antonio Bryant is healthy and his leg issues are sorted out, I think that the added element of speed that he'll bring and the fact that he does have better hands. Terrell Owens might be a future Hall of Famer, but he annually is in the top 10 in drop passes. I think Antonio Bryant will bring something to this team. I just think that T.O. and Chad Ocho Cinco are just two huge personalities on a fairly young team. You got guys like Jermaine Gresham that are coming in, that are trying to learn their way through. Carson Palmer has his hands full with number 85. I couldn't even imagine if you added T.O. to the mix. You look at all their superstars on defense.
you know, when I say superstars, it, you know, up and coming guys like Ray Malaluga, guys like Leon Hall, Jonathan Joseph. I mean, these guys are all fairly young. I don't know if you want to bring in a guy like that. I know he was good in Buffalo last year, but the reality is even if he would have done his antics, nobody's really going to hear too much about it in Buffalo anyways. I think he knew that in order for him to get another shot, he was going to have to be on his best behavior. I don't know if this is a great fit, you know, in my opinion.
Okay, we're going to open this up to Sirius. What do you think about the possibility of T.O. coming in to the Cincinnati Bengals, matching up with Ocho Cinco, and maybe Antonio Bryant can still play the nickel spot? Or is this just a bunch of smoke in the air because they also picked up Jordan Shipley to play that position?
Honestly, I think if it's able to go down, that would be tremendous for the Bengals. However, like the previous caller just said, I just don't see it going down. Marvin Lewis has kind of switched over his whole mindset on how he's coaching, how he's managing that ball club. And aside from Seth Benson's issue, there was really no nonsense to speak of last year from the Bengals, which is pretty much unheard of in this era in football. So if it's able to go down and if T.O. is able to, you know, eat some humble pie or whatever and, you know, understand that he's going to Chad's squad, and then it's on. But I just don't see it going down. I mean, Antonio Bryan is a beast. He went healthy. I really like Jordan Shipley. I can't believe he was able to get picked up that far in the draft. He's going to be tremendous for that organization. And so this whole T.O. talk, I think T.O. right now is just trying to throw a lot of stuff out there so somebody will pick up on him. You know, a squad look at for T.O. Is Oakland. You know, I mean, if we're talking about T.O., I see him going to Oakland.
I got a little thing I can throw in the kitchen. Since they're talking about him joining the Bengals, and they also were talking about a week ago that he was interested in taking a pay cut or going to the Patriots, which team do you think would be more of an explosive trio if he joined? Do you think it would be Bryant, Ocho Cinco, and Owens, or do you think it would be Moss, Holt, and Owens? And I'll actually throw that to you, Sirius, first.
I think that would actually be a better matchup in New England. I mean, was Walker back healthy? You know, oh my goodness. You know, you got T.O. on one side and Randy Moss on the other side. I mean, there's going to be problems. There's going to be some serious problems. And but again, you know, if you're dealing with the health issue, Antonio Bryant, you know, is also no slouch. But I mean, Tom Brady with those school receivers is going to be a problem for squad to deal with. So I'm like the Patriots. I was picking.
All right, we're gonna kick this one over to kick your TP's question over to Brian. What do you think about TP's question?
You know what? To be honest with you, man, he kind of broke up a little bit. Can you repeat the question?
Well, the question was, since, you know, a week and a half ago they were talking about T.O. possibly taking a pay cut to join the Patriots, but now there's talk that he was working out with Carson Palmer all summer long. So which trio do you think would be more of a problem? Do you think it would be Ocho Cinco, Bryant, and Owens, or do you think it would be Owens, Holt, and Moss?
I think at this point in their careers, regardless of what people's individual thoughts are on Moss, I think Moss is still the more explosive player, I think, over the last few years. Granted, I know you can look at who's throwing him the ball, but I think Moss is the better receiver, so I think a Moss-T.O. combo would be better, only because it complements each other. Moss has the speed. T.O.'s the physical guy that can run the underneath routes. Chad, in my opinion, has really lost a step. If you watch him against some of the DBs, he doesn't have that explosive deep speed like he used to have. And I think that's the reason why he struggled the last couple of years. I don't think it's a route running issue. I don't think it's a catching issue. I don't think it's a Carson Palmer issue as much as it's just that Chad is just with pads on, he just doesn't appear physically as fast. So I'm gonna go with Moss and T.O. as a better combination.
All right, I guess we're gonna kick this over to me now. I personally believe that I'm gonna agree with my friend Brian here that it is definitely Moss, T.O. and Welker, even though Welker is coming off the injury. which is going to be a problem. But the X factor is always Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick is a very good mind. He's got a way of taking quote unquote troubled players and turning them into gems. Like, let's not forget Corey Dillon. We've got Randy Moss, what he used to be in Oakland and Minnesota. He was not this team player that he once was before he went to New England. So bringing T.O. into that Belichick, net that he's got going there is just a recipe for success that's been brought together from the history of the Belichick regime. Bringing in these trouble players, and then that's completely opposite of what's been going on in Cincinnati with Marvin Lewis. I mean, when Marvin Lewis and them bring in all these trouble players, they end up getting in trouble again. So, in my opinion, it's a no-brainer that the Moss-T.O. Welker combination, from a talent standpoint and from a head coaching standpoint, is probably far superior to what they have in Cincinnati.
But you don't even have to look at Welker right now, because I'm actually throwing Torrey Holt, because Torrey Holt was the addition that they put in there, you know, to help Edelman, because Edelman is the third option with Holt. So I wonder how that's going to all pan out in New England. Are they going to go with Torrey Holt with the experience and the yardage and all the touchdown grabs that he had in his career? Are they going to go with Edelman, the young guy that, you know, has some loose legs and is ready to go out there and prove something? So that's something that's going to be pretty interesting to see what New England's going to go with right there.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, but we've got about 12 minutes left, so I think it's time to get our predictions out there. We're going to start with TP. Where is the AFC North going? Are the Steelers going to become the class of the division once again? Is the Baltimore Ravens moving on and being able to sustain themselves without Ed Reed? Is it the Bengals who come back and sweep the division again? What's your thoughts?
To me, I think it's Ravens-Bengals. The reason why I say the Ravens is because of the additions they did offensively. Their defense is always a threat, regardless if Ed is there or not. I mean, they're going to, you know, miss the fact that Ed is there to pick the ball up a lot of times. But with Ray there, regardless if Ray is there spitting in your face, letting you know if any dogs are in the house, and he starts barking at them, believe me, that defense responds to them. When he comes out of that tunnel and he starts doing that dance, believe me, everybody in Baltimore goes nuts. I got a few friends that moved down from Stanford into Baltimore, and they just told me the whole city of Baltimore goes black and purple when Ray Lewis gets ready for the game. So I can just imagine what the Ravens are going to do with a good offense this year, let alone they went to the playoffs and did damage to the Patriots last year. So they kind of still have the same chemistry there, so I'm wondering what's going to happen there. But the Bengals, if they get T.O., and T.O. and Ocho Cinco work together, that could be a combo that the AFC is going to have to deal with for the whole season. So hopefully they can make the move. If they make the move, it could be up for grabs between those two teams in that division. But right now I'm going to stand with the Ravens to win the AFC North.
All right, we're going to kick this over to Sirius right now. Sirius, I can only guess where you're going with this, but where are you going for this division?
Wow. I'm staying true to form, man. I'm staying Steelers in Baltimore. I'm not buying this whole Cincinnati Bengal BS. Again, Cleveland's not even a thought. But when it comes down to it, I honestly think there's going to be Pittsburgh winning the division and Baltimore Ravens getting the wild card. You know, going at it like that.
All right. Well, I got to do it again to you, my friend.
It's all right. Come talk to me after week four. I'll be on this right after week four, and you can play your music, too.
I'm going to go with Cleveland in last again. It's unfortunate, but they are getting better. Mike Holmgren's in now. I think this is going to be the last year for the Mangini era again in Cleveland. Even though they're going to have a better record, it's not going to be good enough. I think it's going to be the end for Mangini's pet project, Brett Ratliff, with three other quarterbacks on the roster. he's Brett Ratliff's going to be thrown to the wayside and cut. Then you've got then we're going to have the Steelers missing Ben for 4 to 6 weeks because it's no guarantee that he's going to be coming back after week four. He could miss two more games after that. And if he misses 6 weeks, then that's just going to add more trouble to the situation. But in all reality, even missing four games, if they drop three of those four, they're going to be starting out in a really bad position, and that's a quarter of the season that they're going 1-3. So and I think I don't think they're going to have enough ability to catch up with that. I think the wild card from the AFC North is going to be the Baltimore Ravens. Missing Ed Reed is going to make that secondary very, very porous, and I think it's gonna be a close race for the top of that division, but I just can't see that cornerback and safety core doing much. And then I'm gonna go with the Cincinnati Bengals winning the division again. And I could be wrong. It could be the Baltimore Ravens. It's gonna be really close up top. But anyway, we're gonna kick this over to Brian, and to close out our thoughts on the division.
Well, when I look at this division, I'm gonna do just James. I'm gonna start from the bottom and then go to the top. I think Cleveland is still in the cellar. Like you said, I think that this team is improved. I think bringing in Holmgren brings in the type of mentality. You have somebody that the players can look at and realize, you know what, we got something now that's in here that comes from a tradition of winning. I think you're going to see the guys play a little harder. I think that outside the last few weeks when they knew there was going to be some change, I really didn't think that Cleveland played with the urgency they should have been playing with as a team that, you know, at one point had only won one game. So I think they're going to be improved. I see them winning somewhere between 5 and 7 games, probably closer to the 5 mark. Next on the cellar stairs, I see the Pittsburgh Steelers. I just think that, you know, without Big Ben, I could even probably manage that one. You know, I think they could maybe manage it. I think Willie Colon is a huge, huge hit. By far their most their best offensive lineman. He was their best offensive lineman, best pass protector. And I think he's going to be missed more than the average fan will, you know, allude to. I do like some of the options that they have, you know, as far as, you know, their running backs and some of their receivers. But I just don't think they have enough offense to keep up with the other two teams in this division. Next, I think the Cincinnati Bengals will get a wild card, but I'm actually thinking the Ravens are going to dethrone them. I think that Jermaine Gresham, the kid out of Oklahoma who was drafted in the first round, a tight end, I think he will be utilized this year. He's a very natural hands pass catcher. I think Carson Palmer will love having that big tight end. You know, how long has it been since Cincinnati's had a legitimate tight end threat? I think that Antonio Bryant and Chad Ochocinco will have solid years. But the bottom line is I think the cream of the crop in this division is the Ravens. I know that Ed Reed is going to be out for a while, but you know what? Average secondaries, I mean, people forget that the Jets were the number one ranked pass defense last year, and Revis is great, but you look at the people that were opposite of him, whether it was Dwight Lowry or Lito Shepard, who was released for poor play. I mean, the bottom line is pass rush cures poor coverage ability. They go hand in hand. If you have tenacious pass rushers and your corners are only having to cover for 2 to 3 seconds instead of 4 to 5 seconds, that makes all the difference in the world. I think if you look at this team schematically, they're going to make coverage changes to hide what they're doing. They're going to simplify the defense for the younger corners, and I think they're going to be fine. I mean, I'm not saying that he's going to come in and be an immediate impact guy, but they did sign Walt Harris, who's a former Pro Bowler from the San Francisco 49ers. He is coming off a knee injury, but I think just the tutelage factor will be huge
actually picked the Ravens to be the number one seed and the AFC representative Super Bowl, so I'm sticking with that prediction. I think they're the cream of the crop all the way across. I think their run offense is outstanding, and I also think they have the best offensive line in all of football, and their defensive line, you could argue, is right up there as well.
All right. We ask our guests this every week. So, and you said you're having the Ravens as the AFC representative. Do you have them winning the whole thing, or do you got somebody from the NFC that you think is going to have a better shot at it?
Well, it's a little early, you know. I got to see how a few position battles work out on the NFC side. There is a couple teams that I think could challenge them, but I mean, if I had to make an early prediction right now, I would say the Baltimore Ravens are going to be your Super Bowl champ this year. But I think they're pretty solid from top to bottom. And when you look at your Super Bowl contending teams, the thing that really sets them apart is the depth. Because let's be real here. This is football. It's a contact sport. Injuries are going to happen. You need players that can step up and fill in without missing a beat. And you know what? Baltimore has great depth, whether it be at linebacker. The only place they're really thin at is in their secondary, but they've got good O-line depth. I mean, a guy like Marshall Yanda at Iowa, he'd probably be starting at offensive guard or offensive tackle for most of the teams in the league. You know, he's their first guy off the bench. So they do have good players. You know, look at Michael Orr, look at Jared Gaithier. You look at Pro Bowler, their Pro Bowl center, Matt Burke. They've got great players, a great nucleus, a great coach, and right now they would be my favorite.
Okay, we've got 3 minutes left, so we're going to go around the horn and do our last final shout-outs. Brian, do you want to plug your show on Blog Talk?
Yeah, thank you very much. I just want to thank the Sports City Chef Show for giving me the opportunity to come on here. I do appreciate it. My show is the NFL Expert Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Love for you guys to stop by, and as always, make sure you turn in to the Sports City Chef Show. This is where you get your latest and greatest information about everything. Thank you, guys.
All right. TP, do you have any final words to bring us out on?
Of course. Check us out every day of the week. We are doing our thing just for you in the kitchen. If you got a sports hunger, please grab a dish, sit down at this table, and get it in with us. SportsCityChef.com is the website. We are making some new key additions to the website. Please check us out. It has definitely been changed. The faces of everybody has been shown in Sports City. So now we are real to the people, not just speaking. We are here for you. And just check us out tomorrow. Me and Moe will be at it at the Sunday Morning Brush, 11 to 1, same time, Sunday morning. And I'm loving what we're dishing out at the Gridiron. So tell a friend and tell a friend that it's us again. And if y'all don't know, Now you know.
Well, okay, and I just want to say we have a great lineup. Check us out tomorrow at 11 a.m. We've got the Sunday Morning Brunch. And then on Wednesday nights after the Golf Girl at 9 to 11, at 11 o'clock, we've also got Stephen Lazar, who's a very smart talent. You guys should check him out as well. He's doing pretty much the same thing we're doing in a shorter time frame. He's going over a division and a conference each week. Next week he's doing the NFC North, so you guys should really check that out. I mean, I know I'm calling it, and you're going to hear a whole lot of good NFC North talk on his show as well. Next week we've got John Proctor from the Johnny P Show coming in, and we're going to be talking some NFC South, so I hope you guys turn in. I want to thank everybody who's calling in, listening in, and specifically Jeff Walkie, who always comes in and gets the show rolling. Thanks a lot, and have a nice Saturday.